I'm Jamie Waxman, and that means this is the Hot Socks Podcast. This week, I'm talking with Dixie De La Torre, who started body storytelling a little over 5 years ago in the Bay Area. What is body storytelling? Well, the LA Weekly, described it as the moth for pervs. So if you know what the moth event is, it's a storytelling event that happens across the country where people get up on stage, they have 10 minutes, no notes, to bring the audience through an experience and an adventure with them. And I got to perform at a recent body storytelling in San Francisco. I've seen it in Los Angeles. It's also performed in San Diego. And it's a really, it's a cathartic way to experience your life by putting it in story form. And sitting here with me right now is Dixie, who started body storytelling. Now, Dixie, welcome to Hot Socks.
Thanks, Jamie.
Thanks for being here. we've been like talking for hours before. I was like, I should turn on the mic now. Let's start with, first of all, where can people online can find body storytelling at bawdystorytelling.com.
Thank you. A lot of people are like, B-O-D-Y storytelling. I'm not sure why you call it that, but okay. No, it's B-A-W-D-Y.
And on Twitter as well, mm-hmm. at body.
B-A-W-D-Y, that's it.
It's yes. just at body.
Uh-huh.
Oh, nice. Mm-hmm. And you're also on Twitter at Dixie, D-I-X-I-E, D-L-T. Uh-huh.
D-L-T for De La Torre. Yeah.
Fantastic. So let's start with just the idea of storytelling. Why does storytelling appeal to you?
Well, how often have you made some decision in your life? Some storyteller recently sent me an email after he did the show, and he went, oh my God, all the mistakes in my life I can now make into art. And that's sort of how it feels for me. You know, I've done a lot of crazy things. I didn't understand at the time why I did them, but I felt compelled to do them. And then later on down the road, you get to understand yourself a lot better through, say, you're creating a 10-minute story. You're just like, well, there needs to be a moment of reflection to so the audience understands why I did this. When I first got into storytelling, I was like, I don't know why I did that. And they're like, well, give it some thought. It kind of became my therapy. Like, that's why I made those decisions in my life. I understand myself better. And when I coach storytellers, a lot of times I make them go away. I had someone who told a story last Wednesday for Experience Junkie, which was bucket list, doing things for the sake of doing it. And this woman had sex. She survived a tornado with this guy she didn't know. They were caught outdoors in a tornado. And they just went inside and threw their clothes off and had mad sex because they were alive. And I was like, okay, that's what happened. Let's talk about how you feel about that. What did that tornado mean to you? If it's a moment in your life that you talk about.
So it gets you to also look at the significance of the actions and the events that happen leading up to the decision that you make, in a way.
Yeah.
So you said two things. One is, when did you get into storytelling?
Probably 6 or 7 years ago. I was invited by a friend who is now my DJ for body storytelling. He invited me to come hear him tell us a story, and I was like thinking, you know, little old ladies with prairie hats and dream catchers, and I was thinking it was going to be that old-timey kind of library storytelling. And I went, it was a bunch of people, basically Burning Man people, who just got together and told about crazy things that happened in their life. And I was like, this is the coolest thing I've ever seen. I mean, it was very amateur, but I loved it, except it was in a cafe. And there were people with children in the back of the cafe. And I'm like, I can't tell any story I have here. So, you know, stories make you want to tell stories. So I raced out onto the sidewalk, and people were walking out of the convenience store next door. I'm like, hey, you want to hear a story? Because they were grown up. They didn't have a kid with them. And I told them an appallingly dirty story.
Just to a random stranger on the street.
You have to. You can't. I heard a story. Made me think of a story. I haven't thought about that in 20 years. I have to talk to somebody about it. So I just started accosting strangers on the sidewalk. And eventually the people inside went, why aren't you telling your stories in there? I'm like, not the appropriate place to tell the kind of stories I tell it. And they went, well, why don't you just say, instead of saying fuck, you could say, you know, and then we did it. I'm like, the story is about the sex. It's not casual reference to sex. The story is about sex, usually. And it's sex and gender is what we talk about. But we can't glance over that, you know. Why did you do all the crazy sexual things you've ever done in your life? You have to examine that. You can't go, no, we totally did it. It doesn't work.
Interesting. So do you, what was that first story that you got so excited to tell?
I'm not sure, but the first story that I ever told, the guy who threw that event, after a while trying to say, well, Dixie, why don't you just tone it down a little bit? I'm like, I can't. I don't know how to tone myself down. And he said, okay, if you really want to do this, I will host the first one because I had a terrible fear of public speaking.
Really?
Yes. I can talk to small groups of two or three. I mean, at the time. Now I perform in front of 500 people and it doesn't bother me. But at the time, I'm like, I can't get up in front of people and talk about that stuff. So he goes, I'll MC. You have to tell a story. I'm like, oh. So I worked on the story and I was a total pussy about it. My first story was about meeting a woman off Match.com. And she said she was looking for friends. And she's like, I'd like to get together with you. You seem like my kind of person. I invited her to go to this bluegrass event. And over 3 or 4 glasses of red wine, she told me that she was a doctor's wife. They had just gone through a divorce. She had found some hot young thing. And she was paying his rent. She was totally a cougar. And she's like, but he's decided he won't have sex with me anymore because, you know, he's just not attracted to me. And I'm like, and you're paying his rent? And she's like, yeah. And she goes, I'm so horny. I'm like, well, you only live like 10 blocks from the Power Exchange. She went, what's the Power Exchange? And I went, it's the place we're going right after this because, you know, I can show around. And I used to love to do that. I used to love to go to the Power Exchange, which is a sex club in San Francisco, and just lead people around and say, and this is the Frankenstein room. And
what's the Frankenstein room?
It's a room that has one of those balls that you put your hands on. That
oh, they, like Tesla, not Tesla coil, but sort of.
I don't know what that's called. Yeah.
Yeah.
As those and just, you know, there's a.
The mad scientist ball.
It's a mad scientist room. It's very themed. It's very comic booky. The guy who started it was very into comic books. So there's all this comic book art. There's Superman. Then there's a place to fuck right next to Superman. It doesn't make any sense at all.
Is Power Exchange still around?
Yeah. Okay. It's moved and I haven't been there in a while.
So you told a story about, first of all, I didn't realize people went on Match to make friends.
I never didn't know that either.
I never thought that. Never. Who would have thunk?
So I took her to the Power Exchange and we had just gotten downstairs in the dungeon and some young guy with gold chains around his neck came over and sidled up to her and started talking to her. And she came over and went, Dixie, this guy wants to go talk to me. I'm like, go talk to him. And she goes, I can't leave you alone by here. And I'm like, I'll be fine. Trust me. And there was this BDSM scene going on in the middle of this chain link fence area. And all these guys are like single female hitting on me. And I'm getting very defensive. People think I'm a dominatrix in a sex club because I'm like, you need to back the fuck up now. And this guy who was talking to me, I realized that he wasn't being offensive. He was being a total gentleman. He just happened to be in a sex club. So eventually we warmed up to each other and started talking. And a guy, an older guy who'd seen me walk in with this woman, said, hey, your friend's on TV. And I went, what does that mean? He goes, your friend's on TV. And the guy next to me, whose name was Alan, was just like, and I went, oh, fuck. So we walked to the wall of closed circuit TV.
Oh, there's a closed circuit TV wall.
Which shows the other side of the room. It's 24 TVs showing what's going on in the room on the other side. And there were so many guys in that room, you could not see a woman. It was like from the top, it was like 50 guys around a bed, but you couldn't see the bed anymore because they were all surrounding it. And I'm like, oh, she's in that room. So I go around the wall, go in, and the guys all go, hey, we got another one, and start trying to yank my clothes off because it's that kind of energy in the room. And I'm throwing punches. You don't touch me. And the guy with me starts like pushing him off, going, don't you touch her. And I'm like, ooh, he's gallant in a sex club. That's awesome. And I eventually get to the bed, and it's one of the strangest things I've ever seen in my life. As I'm coming, making my way to the bed, there are so many guys gangbanging her that the guy inside her is, you can tell he's just about there. It was like sperms and an egg was what it really looked like. She was the egg and they were all like, here's my opportunity. So there's all this antsy energy from the, there is one opportunity to get in that one hole. And they were all like frantically aiming for it. And I was like shocked and freaked out and turned on kind of at the same time going, I have never seen anything like this. And I got around her and came up to her and she was laying back with this blissed out look on her face. And I'm like, girl, are you okay? And she goes, I'm so good. I'm like, are you sure? uh-huh, this, yes, yes. And I'm like, you're doing what you want to do. She goes, I'm doing what I want to do. And I'm like, so how about I take your glasses in your purse so you don't get robbed while you're getting gangbanged? She goes, that's a great idea. Meanwhile, they're kind of changing off.
And this is the first time you've met her.
Yes. Offmatch.com. Who she wants a friend to hang out with. I didn't see this coming at all. And so I take her stuff and I said, I'll be upstairs in what I called the rumpus room, which was the drink out of a Coke machine kind of hangout room. And this guy and I sat there and had a conversation, just like the most non-sexual conversation. And eventually she comes hobbling across. You can see her coming from all the way across the room, and she's walking like she's been riding a horse for about 4 days.
How long does the whole event last?
She'd been down there 2 or 3 hours.
That's awesome. Okay.
And we're sitting on these tall bar stools. There's a third one for her, and as she climbs on the bar stool, she kind of winces, and it was like, oh, how you doing? She's like, I'm good. And she's kind of feeling ashamed about what she's done because she doesn't know me.
Sure. You know,
she wasn't expecting it to go there either, I guess. And I'm like, how you doing? She's like, I'm fine. And I'm like, so it was a grand total. And she goes, of what? And I went, of guys you just fucked. And she went, three. I'm like, you did three while I was in a room. And she went, I don't know. She actually contacted me later and said, I talked to my therapist about it. I guess it's a fantasy I always had, and I decided to do it. And
she still felt like she had to explain it to you, like that you were judging her or something.
Yeah. And, you know, it was one of those things where you're like, that is so not the decision I would have made. If you wanted to make that decision, good for you. I'm happy I helped you live out a fantasy and that I watched the
Did you ever see her again?
No.
Wow.
I've heard about her peripherally through other groups.
Like, so she's in the scene somewhere.
She was in the scene. I don't know if she is now. But I watched. Everybody was using condoms. You know, they were queued up, but they had condoms on. And I was like, okay, as long as you're doing it safely and that's your decision and you want to do this, go for it. You know?
So this is the story that you first told?
Yes. Do you know what's pussy about that story? That was not me having sex in that story.
That is pussy about that story. Amen, sister. Yeah.
And then after that, I went, yes, it did happen to me. And if I'm part of the story, then it is my story to tell. But I decided after that, like, if you've done all these things, the story should be your own story.
So what was the first story you told about you? Or one of your favorite stories to tell about you, if you don't remember the first.
It's certainly not the first, but one I've told quite a few times lately is there is a swinger site, or there's a swinger event here in town, and they decided to, and swinger is not my community. I'm more involved in the polyamorous costumed scene.
I love this particularness of
not just polyamorous. It's got to be polyamorous and costumed.
This is the thing about the sex industry. It's like we're so small already, and then it's like, well, I'm polyamorous costumed. I'm polyamorous non-costumed. I'm polyamorous. I'm only 6 foot and over, or whatever. Yeah,
exactly.
Anyway,
but swinger's not my scene. But they asked me to come and be like a token unicorn. And just like your party starter, come talk to people. You're good at that.
I have done that so many times at sex parties.
They're like, we know you don't care about the outcome of this. You don't care if you end up getting laid or not. You just like to talk to people about weird things. And it's perfect. It's the perfect environment for that. And they had decided it was going to be one of those nights where single guys were allowed. Because, you know.
Oh, those are always bad nights.
Yes. And I figured it sounded like a train wreck, so I wanted to go. Like, that's not gonna work. I want to go to that. And when I walked in, there's like 12 hand-picked guys that were all picked by couples. Like, we gave a testimonial for this guy, and what, there was nobody in that room I wanted to talk to. Like, the guys were all just like chest hair chains, just like not the kind of guy I walk up and say I have to talk to you. And I ended up talking to someone on the porch. There was a porch outside where people could just get some fresh air. And this guy was kind of out there by himself overwhelming this couple who looked like it had been their first time. And they're just sitting there like looking at him like they're afraid of him. And he turns around and introduces himself. It turns out I know him because I'm part of the core party planning community. I'm like, I know you. I've never met you, but I know your name. And he goes, I know you. And he tells me that he had just gotten married. He was always a big, you know, he threw orgies all the time. And he would organize them on Craigslist. And he would say, if you want to come to an orgy, send me your cell phone number. I will send you a text. And it will say, room 1504 at the Argent Hotel. Be there at 4:30.
And you just know that's an orgy.
And that's an orgy. And people would show up. And he never knew anybody. And he was kind of packing up his stuff at the end of the night. And there was a woman there that everybody had had sex with. And they started talking. And he was like, wow, she speaks 5 languages. And she's an actual rocket scientist. She's worthy of me. So he started, they'd see each other at orgies, hang out. I just want to get a clean, oh, I'm going to talk to you. But he hadn't known her name. And eventually they made a date outside an orgy. And eventually he said, so the only thing I can give you if we get married is I want to give you something I've never given anybody else, which is monogamy.
Whoa!
And he's telling me this at a sex party. And I'm like, that's interesting. That's an interesting choice. And he goes, would you like to meet her? And I go in and I meet her. And she's gorgeous. She's wearing a leopard dress that perfectly matches the leopard chaise lounge she's laying on. And she's wearing these high gold heels, just all reclining back. And she goes, oh, Dixie, I've heard your name. And we just are having the best conversation. And eventually they say, you know, the party's starting to wind down. We live right around the corner. Do you want to come over? And we're having the best conversation with you. And I'm like, absolutely, let's do that. Not realizing that they were swingers that I had met at a swinger party.
So then he didn't ever give her monogamy. Because I was thinking, like, well, maybe they just like to have sex with each other at sex parties now. But that's not what they wanted you to go back to the house for.
Well, I thought they found me interesting. Wrong. So they get me back to the house. And they say, we have this enormous loft. He collects art. And art is everywhere. And he's an art dealer. And he's like, this place is enormous. The only room we really bother to heat is the bedroom back there. So why don't you come back to the bedroom?
That's a great line.
I know. And it had those fucking freezer flaps. To keep it warm, so it totally worked. I was like, freezer flaps, that's brilliant when you live. I'm always cold. And so I walked in, and she climbs onto the giant king-size bed, and she's got these gold heels that hurt me to look at. And she climbs on the bed, puts her back against the headboard, and he's darting around in the background. And I just, you know, I'm talking to her. I pull her shoes off, and I start rubbing her feet because I'm like, girl, I don't know how you wear those things.
And you're still just thinking, are you still just thinking? Oh,
I'm
just,
it's not hit me at all. I'm just like having a great conversation, you know? I'm rubbing her feet. She's like, oh, that feels so good. And eventually he puts on mood music and candles, and I'm not paying any attention to him, so I haven't noticed. And eventually he cuddles up next to her at the headboard, and they're both opposite me. And he puts his arm around her and waits for a pause in the conversation, then looks at her and goes, do you believe we got her? How did we get her? And then he looks at me and says, we never agree on the same women. We're always on different pages. And you walked in tonight and we went, her, really? You too? We wanted you so bad. And so here's what I have to tell you. I want to do all kinds of things to you. And I want to watch
him.
I want to watch you with my wife. I want to watch you 269. And then your hands are smaller than me, so I'd like to watch you fist her for a while. And he's just listing off this litany of things that he wants to have happen. And I'm like, holy fuck. How stupid am I? I know this guy socially, you know? I mean, even though we didn't know each other in person, when you know someone socially, you run into them everywhere as soon as you meet them. I'll see him 3 times next week, and it's going to be awkward if I go, oh, dude, I'm so sorry. I didn't realize you were picking me up. I thought you just wanted to talk to me. And then he's going to go, we were at a swinger party, stupid. You know? So he's just listing off these things, and I'm thinking frantically of how I can get out of there without embarrassing them and embarrassing me. And he's like, and this and that and this and that, and I just have to apologize to you because I'm monogamous, which means that I cannot fuck you. I really want to fuck you.
Oh, that's what it means.
I really want to fuck you, but I can't fuck you, and I really apologize about that. And I went, I wouldn't worry too much about that. And he went, really? Why? I'm like, and I looked down at his wife's feet in my hands and say, because I'm into feet. And he went, what? I'm like, I'm into feet. He's like, you are not. Just feet? I'm like, just feet. So everything you just mentioned, absolutely fine, except while you fuck your wife, I'm gonna rub your feet. And while she's on top of you, reverse cowgirl, I wanna rub her feet. And I just totally turned it into.
And go you, you're matching background?
No! I was just like, I don't wanna make them feel bad. And he keeps looking at her like, that is weird. And then he went, well, okay. And so they started having sex with each other, and I just was cheerleader going, oh, yeah, oh, that's so fucking hot. Let me, oh, your feet are so, oh, you know. And every time they look away, I'm looking at my fucking watch like Jane Fonda and Clute going, how fucking long do I have to sit here and do this before I can leave, before it's not uncomfortable? And it's about 2 hours. And eventually the sun's coming up, and I went, I don't know where I am, because we caught a cab here, and you told him where we are, so could you call me a cab? And he walks me down the 3 flights to the sidewalk, and he's waiting for a cab with me, and he goes, I have done everything in my life. I've had orgies, escorts, every adventure there's ever been, and I've never had anybody rub my feet while I made love to my bride, and it is awesome!
Do you still see him around socially?
No, he moved out of town.
Okay. So, wow. So you became this foot fetishist without...
He actually came to a sex party a couple of weeks later, and people were talking about body storytelling because there had just been a show, and they were talking about me, and somebody said Dixie De La Tour, and he walked up, and he goes, are y'all talking about Dixie De La Tour? And they went, yes. He goes, did you know she's just into feet? And all the people knew me and knew that meant... something was amiss, and went, oh yeah, I've heard that about her. And then they immediately called me and went, okay, there's this dude at a sex party telling everybody you only play with feet. I'm like, yeah.
Oh my. These are like only in, well, they're not only in San Francisco stories, but they are more often in San Francisco stories. Mm-hmm. You know,
yeah, I bet this is harder to make happen in Iowa.
Yeah, exactly. Although I would love to see and know if there are sex parties sprouting up. I mean, that
wouldn't you?
It would be so wonderful to like know what happens in other parts of the country, the non-coastal parts of the country.
Where that's one of the reasons I want to tour the show, because I love hearing people's stories, and I want to hear, like, the best thing about what I do is I put my email address out everywhere and tell people, send me a story.
So let's talk about that idea, body storytelling. It started, like you said, you had gone to with a friend to a storytelling event and realized you could not tell the story that you wanted to tell there.
Right.
And so you got the idea to start telling stories.
Mm-hmm.
So where was the first body?
It was in where people worked on their Burning Man art cars. It was a warehouse out in Bayview. And it was pretty far out, but we actually made it a potluck, like a pervert coffee clutch / potluck. And people weren't, we had a good turnout for the first one, but people weren't sure what to expect. Like, can I just listen? That was the biggest problem. People didn't understand. They thought they had to tell one. So people would go, I really want to go to that, but you're not going to make me tell one. I have a fear of public speaking. I would never make anybody get up and tell a story. But they didn't trust me. Like, they would go, that's what you said. But so I started curating the show. And if you saw that your name wasn't on the list of people who were telling stories, you go, oh, good. Okay. I can just go listen.
So that was a big just relief for a lot of people to know there's a lineup. So the lineup started. And how did you, because you do coach it very similar or the same way, really, as the moth storytelling event.
Mm-hmm.
When did you start doing that? The first stories were probably people just telling stories. Mm-hmm. It's very difficult to tell a good story. People don't realize that.
It is. Most people are used to anecdotes. They're just like, they walk into a party, they figure they've got 1 minute of time, you know? Like, before everybody converges and they're like, hey, Susan, you know, they figure I can walk in, I got my 1 minute. So this just happened to me, and they blurt it out because they know somebody else is going to come up and interrupt them. And people have gotten used to just stampeding toward, you know, the punchline to get it in before they're interrupted. And as I fell more and more in love with storytelling, I just learned more about the craft and realized that, you know, we could do this so much better. They just never had the airtime, so I just really wanted to slow them down, teach them the basics, so that they could take whatever they have. I try and make sure that the story they tell is only the story they want to tell. Like, I'm going to say, I asked a bunch of questions, but that's not where I'm leading you to. I'm just saying.
So what makes a good story?
Storytelling arc is important. You know, a lot of people just want to jump right in. Context in the beginning so that we understand where we are. A lot of people, when they tell a story, they're inside their head and they're like, so she said. And I often have to go, did she have a name and what does she look like? Because we're not there with you. We're not inside your head. And they're like, well, I don't want to say her real name. I'm like, you don't have to say her name. You just have to say a name so that we can picture this person as she is introduced to us. And as we move through the story, we want to be able to picture who we're with and where we're going. And the biggest problem is getting people to realize that there needs to be that moment of reflection where you think about what you did.
That zeitgeist moment too, that transformational point.
Yes, that's a hard thing to get people to do.
Yeah.
Some people are naturals at it, and some people take a lot of work and you have to ask a lot of questions. But it's really fun to see them get it. Like the tornado girl. When she, you know, I asked her a bunch of questions. I'm like, so did that tornado come through your life? You were fucking everybody that moved? You were fresh out of your parents' house? You were 18 years old and you were on a rampage. Did that tornado change anything? She's like, no. I'm like, you met your partner a couple months later. Did you become monogamous? No. So what happened with that tornado? And she got on stage and said, you know, a lot of people see an act of God like that as a reason to change your ways. And she goes, I didn't. I'm proud of the pervert I am today, you know, and went a totally different direction than I expected her to. But I do want them to tell what's really going on for them. I ask questions not to lead them, but to make them look at themselves and what they did.
Is there a particular story that really impacted you, like was one that had this effect on you that you didn't even realize you were going, obviously it impacted you so you didn't know you were going to have the effect, but is there a story that really changed how you think about something or just that has left a mark?
Are you going to make me cry now? Is that what's going to happen? We had a story November, December recently. And there are occasionally ones that I'm sitting there bawling on stage, you know.
Because you are always on stage at the event. It's very nurturing to have you on stage in the background at your body storytelling events.
Yeah, in the early days, I would get up in front of people and I would hold your hand if you were nervous.
Oh, wow.
Like, don't look at me, but I'm standing right here because it's hard to, like, share your vulnerable moments in front of people. It's great when you get off the stage, but it's terrifying while you're doing
sure.
it.
Sure.
So I've always been on stage. And when we eventually moved to a place where there was room for me to, like, not be on the stage, then people, those storytellers were like, you have to be on stage because you're kind of making faces, like, as you're hearing things because I know the stories. And if they change something, I'm like, huh. And people are watching me while they're watching the storytellers, too.
And you give the audience permission to have their emotional experience as well because they see on stage the experience happening.
Yeah. There's the storyteller's experience and then there's me going, wow. You know, or what? You know, there's quite a few what moments lately. There was a story on stage recently, a storyteller named Sarah Dopp, who runs a site called Genderfork. And she told a story about, we're working on a book and I'm trying to get her to write this. And she said she's going to write it for us soon. She had problems getting into her Twitter account. And they didn't realize she was who she was. And she's brainstorming with all these techno geeks online. And this person who seems to have joined the conversation gives her a solution that works greatly. And she's just like,
she just can't log into her Twitter account?
Yeah, she's just locked out. And, so this person gives her the solution and she's like, who are you? She starts doing research. She's geek. She's really good at doing research. This person is transgendered. I think her name is Meredith in the story. And there is like everything that points toward all these blog posts about it, but they're gone. And Sarah writes her and says, thank you so much. I really want to know you better. You know a lot of my friends of friends. And everything points to this, and I don't know your story, but I'd like to know you. You know, and the woman sends her everything.
So this woman was helping her with her Twitter account.
Yes, right. So this woman sends her the entire information about her transgender journey, and that's kind of Sarah's world. And they start talking about the fact that this woman has completed her journey and is now a woman, but she's never used this brand new vagina. She's in Australia, and Sarah's going, you're right, you're in Australia, you can't do that. I'm in San Francisco, you could do that easy, but you're in Australia. Life's a little harder, you know, you can't spring that on anybody. You should try it out. But how do we help you with that? And eventually Sarah went, so the way we do that is I get on a plane and I fly to Australia.
Whoa.
So she takes off work. She gets on a plane halfway to Australia. She goes, wow, what am I doing? Gets off the plane and the woman's there, looks exactly like she pictured her. And she's just like, I've been thinking about this. We don't know each other. And the woman says, thank God, I've been terrified. You're staying with me, we're friends, you know, no pressure. She puts Sarah in her bed and says, I'm going to sleep on the couch. And she's making up the bed for her. And Sarah says, let's cuddle. And the woman's like, she's, no, just cuddle. And they start cuddling, and it leads to more. And eventually, she gives her an orgasm, and the woman's like, wow. And she's like, they go to bed. And the next day, they go out like girlfriends. They're riding around.
So Sarah gives the woman an orgasm in her new vagina.
Yes. You ask good questions. I get carried away in the story sometimes, no. Particularly since it's not mine. I'm sharing somebody else's. And they know that that night, Saturday night, is going to be the night. And Sarah, who has never used a strap-on, has brought a strap-on with her so that she has that, you know. And I'm sitting in the audience going, wow, I don't know that that's, you know, brand new vagina. It's not where I'd start with that. But
yeah, because a strap-on is like a phantom limb. You don't know where it begins or ends. Like, anytime I've used one, and I don't use them very much, I'm just like, I can't feel how far I'm going in you.
And a brand new vagina? Well, yeah. Think about that. Yeah. Yeah. So, she, you know, puts on the strap-on and starts fucking Meredith, and they're having sex, and Meredith has this loud screaming orgasm, and Sarah's afraid she's hurt her with the strap-on, you know? And she's like, are you okay? And Meredith says, let's see what this baby can do. And they proceed to have nonstop sex all night long, and the woman is having orgasm after orgasm after orgasm, and Sarah's legs are starting to get a little tired. And eventually, when they get to the ninth orgasm, I'm like, holy shit, lucky woman.
Yeah.
Sarah's like, I think this is the last one. I think I'm pretty tapped out here. Let's make it a good one. And they have this loud screaming orgasm fall on each other. And the woman says, oh my God, it's like the past never happened.
Oh my God.
Everybody was crying. It's just one of the most touching stories I've ever heard.
She fucked her into her body, into the present. That's beautiful.
Yeah.
And these are the types of stories that you do get at Body Storytelling, because there is a difference between getting up on stage. I mean, I told a story, and I know there's rehearsing, there's discussing with you. You spend a lot of time with your storytellers to nurture them into the story that they want to actually tell, not the story necessarily they think they're going to tell at first. Mm-hmm. And they're all, I mean, when you tell a story, the goal is transformation, regardless of a big or a small or whatever that means, transformation. And you give that space for people to share those moments. And that's what happens every... Body Storytelling in San Francisco happens pretty often between San Francisco and Oakland. Is it weekly?
No, it's twice a month. Once in San Francisco, once in Oakland.
So every month, there's two different times to transform here. And then again, you were saying taking it across the country to see what's going on. So at Body Storytelling, people can share their stories with you right now. Is that how you foster?
Yeah. If anybody is anywhere in the country and they want to tell me a story, you know, I don't know where I'm going. I just know that I want to get it out in the world, and I want to hear the stories in other cities, because San Francisco is a pretty unique place, and I've lived here a long time. I'd really like to know what it's like. I grew up in the South. I know what it's like to be repressed.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up in the Blue Ridge Mountains of Virginia, and then I moved to Atlanta when I was 18.
Okay.
So I've got a mixed accent.
Does your family know about Body Storytelling?
They do not like it.
Okay.
My mother's always like, that thing you do. I'm like, if you care that much about what your friends think, just say I do a storytelling event. You don't have to go any farther than that. And she's just like, I don't like it. I'm like, actually, we're talking about sometime soon doing a Mothers of Body event for the sex educators whose parents kind of...
That's very San Francisco.
It is. And I'm like, I can tell you my mother will not be hosting that event. I will be hosting that event because that's not where she'd come from. But like Reed Mahalko's mom, several of our friends, their mothers are very sex positive, and we'd love to hear stories from, you know, people who are in their 60s or 70s.
That would be wonderful, and Joan Price would probably be someone wonderful to tell a story for that. She's here in the Bay Area, and she's written books like Naked at Our Age, and she's in her... either her late 60s or early 70s now, and she's very open about sexuality. So if you came from the South, where did you learn about sex growing up? I want to talk a little bit about you now.
My mother told me the facts of life when I was 10, and she read it out of a book called Everything You Always Wanted to Know About Sex. And she talked about the sperm and the egg, and she was so stressed out discussing sex that I got up and threw up halfway through.
Wow.
Because her stress was passed on to me. And I knew that if she were that stressed out about it, it must be something really interesting, you know? Think about that when you raise your kids. If you're sitting there going, it's not okay, they're going to go, it must be pretty good if you won't talk about it. So I kind of got obsessed with it.
At 10?
Yeah, pretty much. I somehow always ended up in the South at that age. It was pretty hard to find stuff to learn. My mother used to work in Roanoke, Virginia, which was 30 miles away from where we lived. I would go in during the summer and I would say, I'm going to go to the movie house up the street and watch movies all day. I'd get on the bus, go all the way across town. I'd go to the X-rated theater and it would have quarter loops where you put the quarters in. And I would go in with a roll of quarters and I would just watch movies to try and learn about sex. And dirty old men would walk in and go, "Hey, little girl." And I'd go, "You need to get away from me. I'm here to watch a movie. I'm not here to fool around with you." So 15 years old, I was sneaking into the quarter loops.
What did you learn in the quarter loops?
I learned about anal sex. I learned about how to give a blowjob. So that when the cheerleaders in my high school would say, "You're a nasty girl. Tell us how to give a blowjob." I could tell them exactly how to give a blowjob. I'm like, "So you want to make sure that you sheath your teeth. They also like it when you play with their balls. Holding the base is good, you know."
But why did they say you were a nasty girl?
Because I had a very open attitude. And, okay. You know, when...
Was it a small town?
Yeah, it was really small. It was like 1,200 people in my hometown. So I was the girl that, you know, would just go, "Here's what I just learned today." And it was, unfortunately, I learned it from the quarter loops or a book, if I could get my hand on a book. And I read everything I could get about sex. And so the cheerleaders would say, "Teach us how to get a blowjob." And at some point, somebody went, "How many blowjobs have you given?" I'm like, "I haven't, and I've never had sex. I didn't have sex till I was about 18.
Okay.
But I knew everything I could get my hand, you know. Anything I could find, I learned and passed on to other people. And eventually, you know, I just was waiting for somebody who felt like the right person. Ended up being my gay best friend.
No way! How did that happen? Were you just like, "Let's do it"? Did he know he was gay at the time?
Oh, no. Yeah, I knew he was gay. Yeah.
Okay.
He was having sex with another friend. I knew that they had sex with each other. And just, I was kind of their fag head. Would hang out with him all the time. And one time, I used to go over and hang out at his house and smoke pot with him when we were 17. And just would hang out at his house till 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. We just were together all the time. And it was a kind of a fork off the main road going to my house. If I was at work in the town that was 30 miles away, I would either decide to go to his house or go home. And one night I came and he was standing at the fork in the road without any shoes on. And I stopped and went, "What are you doing here?" I started to turn into his driveway. He goes, "No, keep going. I've decided we're going to have sex." And I'm like, "You're gay." And he's like, "So I've only had sex with men, but I haven't had sex with a woman, and you've never had sex. So we're both virgins, and we both are interested in the topic, and we like each other, so why don't we have sex with each other?" And I proceeded to argue with him as we drive around town, which isn't that big. And eventually he says, "I notice you haven't stopped driving yet, though, have you?" I'm like, "Yeah, I guess I kind of want to do that." And so we drove down to the wayside, which was this picnic area that was shut off late at night, and drove in there, and he started jerking off his cock in front of me, and I was just like, "I can't look at you. You're my friend."
And you had touched penises before, or not so much?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Drunken high school.
But yes, but I always see your friend's dick.
Yeah. You know, "You're my buddy. Don't do that. That's weird for me." And he's like, "You know, you want to look at it." And then eventually, this is not proper to say, but we know I'm not PC.
So no, I'm not really.
And it was
PC
a long time ago. And eventually we're in the front seat of my gigantic 71 Impala, which you could turn into a guest room, seriously. And we're in the front seat and he's just like, "Come over here," and tries to get me to, you know, "We're going to start having sex." I'm like, "Where's the condom?" And he goes, "Oh," I'm like, "You planned this, but you didn't bring a condom." And he goes, "I didn't think that far ahead." And I'm like, "Okay. So you've had butt sex before. We could have butt sex, right?" And he goes, "What?" And I'm like, "Well, you know how to do that, and I won't get pregnant, and my number one priority is not get pregnant." And he's like, "Okay." And so I sat down on his dick after he spit on it. Aren't we classy?
Lube for the ass. Lube for the ass, people.
Condoms okay. are good, too.
Yeah, condoms are very good, too, actually. That's the first point. Condoms and lube for the ass.
And so I couldn't breathe. I was sitting on his lap, but I couldn't breathe. And I went, "I never realized your butt and your lungs were that close together. Why does it feel like you're poking me in the lungs?" Huh. And really, it was just adjusting yeah. to things. You know, I was like huffing and puffing, going, "Oh, I can't breathe." And then eventually we climbed in the back seat And he was on top of me, and we're kind of doing it doggy style. We're having anal sex. And he starts doing that shorter thrust thing where he's getting really close. And in the final thrust, he slides out of my ass and into my vagina.
Oh, no, that makes it even worse. Ah, E.T., anything is not good. Okay.
So, yeah, that's...
So that's your first sex experience.
That's a big load of semen in a very fertile girl. And I proceed to beat the shit out of him, going, what is, you know, we're instantly back in friend mode. I'm going, what is wrong with you? You were going to, now I'm going to be pregnant, you know. And he's just kind of like, I'm sorry. And I ended up having a class with him on Monday, which was really uncomfortable because I'm like, oh my God, he's my friend. And now I've had sex with him. It's going to be weird. And that's, the story will go on too long if I go into that. But he called me as soon as I got home from school and went, so... hey, let's talk about that. I'm like, I have thought about it. We're friends. It's weird. We should never do that again. And he goes, really? Because I kind of want to do that. I'm like, really? You want to do that? And he goes, yeah, I want to do it again. I'm like, so we have to wait to see if I'm pregnant before we can do that. So I made him wait like 3 weeks.
And you weren't pregnant.
I weren't pregnant.
And nothing happened from having ATV asked to be.
No, isn't that lucky?
That's lucky too.
So 3 weeks later, we went back to the Montvale Wayside and.
With a condom.
With a condom. Got in the back seat. And I'm like, I'm scared. It's going to hurt. And he goes, it's not going to hurt that bad. I'm like, it ain't going to hurt you. It's going to hurt me.
The best is you didn't say this about the anal sex part.
No, I wasn't worried about the anal. Didn't occur to me it was going to hurt that bad, but I had heard plenty of stories about losing your virginity and how much it hurt. And so he's on top of me. You know, we're doing missionary in the back seat. In the back seat. And he's like, it's not going to hurt that bad. And as he slides inside me, I just bite the fuck out of his shoulder as hard as I can. And he screams. And I'm like, if it hurts me, it hurts you. He had a mark on his neck for a month.
His neck. So he had it at school. People could see it.
Uh-huh. Purple bite marks for a month. I'm like, that's... if you're going to hurt me, I'm going to hurt you. And so we go at it for a while. It's starting to get good. And then after a while, I'm like, check the condom. And I'm poking around and I can't find it. And he's feeling around. He gets outside. He's feeling around in the floorboards. He can't find the condom. And eventually I go, so just grab another one. And he just gives me that look again. I'm like, you didn't bring two condoms. You only brought one condom. And he goes, well... it was progress from the last time, right? I'm like, so now we're all horned up and we got to go home.
This is like lessons in how not to be prepared. Yeah.
And I drop him off at his house and I'm cussing him out. You stupid. God, about the time it gets good is when you're going to mess it up, you know. And I get home and I go to pee and there in the toilet bowl is a condom, of course, because it got sucked up inside.
And nothing gets lost in the vagina. You can get anything out of the vagina. Uh-huh. The ass is a different story.
Flanges. And it's about 2:00 in the morning and I call his house and his dad answers the phone. And you know, his dad was really cool. He was one of those really cool dads. And he's like, hey Dixie, what's going on? I'm like, is Brian around? And he goes, yeah, he's in his room, I'll get him. I'm like, do me a favor, just pass something on for me, will you? I found it. He goes, okay. And so Brian's in his bedroom smoking pot, he's totally stoned. His dad knocks on the door and he hides the bong, and his dad sticks his head in and says, Dixie wants you to know she found it. And he's looking at his dad like, did she tell him what she... thanks, Dad.
So
it took a month to lose my virginity.
Wow.
5 weeks.
And I love it because, I mean, the story is, it just gets better. You're like, well, you don't have a condom. Let's have butt sex. Oh, then he comes inside your vagina anyway. And then it's like, I have to wait till I see if I'm pregnant before. No STI worries whatsoever. I have to see if I'm pregnant before we have sex again.
You don't get to learn about STIs from watching Quarter Loops.
That's true. And I imagine, I don't remember having sex education, and I grew up in New York. And
that's another thing. By the way, my mother would not let me take sex education.
Oh, so they did offer it in your school.
They offered it.
I mean, we had like a class.
One class, yes. Mm-hmm. And you had to sign a permission slip. Yes. My mother would not sign it, which everybody thought was hilarious because I was teaching everybody how to have sex. I was just like, hey, here's the answers to your questions when you present them to me. But my mother wouldn't sign the permission slip. So I had to sit in the library and read a book while everybody else was learning sex ed.
Do you remember what book you read? I would have read a sex book just to spite my mom.
I don't really remember what the book was.
Although I'm sure your library didn't have sex books.
No, it was a reserved section. And if you got it, you could only, you know, it was still, they give you that look. The librarians would give you that look. Like, why do you want to know about you know.
Isn't it amazing? I mean, there was an article last week or 2 weeks ago about schools, again, still limiting sex ed and trying to stop it from happening in their schools. And it's like, people, don't you remember when you were a teenager or a child? You were curious about sex. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that's something I like will always remember. I remember when I was a kid saying, don't forget you were curious about this. Because I want to be able to say, like, kids, you should be curious, and we should be teaching you at least enough to know, like, how to protect yourself, and that sex is for pleasure and fun and not just for procreation.
And that's one of the things we're trying to do. We're trying to take body to colleges, the college students who are the ones who are having sex. I mean, the thing that storytelling does really well is teaches you. We learn through story. So if you tell me a story from your life, or I tell you the story I just told, and you go, got it, condoms are a good idea, but sex sometimes makes you feel like you can't breathe, you know, like things that you learn that aren't heavy-handed, you know,
and that you learn you're not alone. And if someone is willing to admit something that was a big like fear or obstacle, I mean, you and I talked about possibly telling another story at one of the upcoming bodies, and for me, one of my biggest obstacles growing up was being ashamed. I was very ashamed of my sexuality when I was from 11 to 27. And being able to tell that as a story makes me less ashamed of, I mean, I'm not ashamed of it anymore, but it really helped make me less ashamed of it. Being able to get on radio, which is how I eventually became less ashamed of my sexuality, by telling the world about it. And by people being able to relate to it, which was really important.
Yeah. You know, my stories are mainly cautionary. Like every order my mother got from Avon, as soon as the Avon delivery came in the afternoon, I would go in, I would get the tube of mascara, I'd go in the bathroom, I'd stick it in my butt. Just because I was like, wonder what that would feel like. And then, of course, it's not flanged, so I'd be stuck in the bathroom trying to get that thing out. Because how embarrassing is it to ask your mother, who hates sex, to take you to the emergency room to get the mascara out of your butt?
How did you get it out?
Straining and spending a lot of time in the bathroom. She's like, what? Do we need to take you? What's wrong with you? Why are you in the bathroom so much? It happened, you know, anybody with sense would have only done it once. I think I did it two or three times.
Someone said, never make the same mistake three times.
Like, yeah, well, not the brightest bulb sometimes. I'm just like, that felt kind of good, but it was really hard to get it out, but it felt kind of good.
Oh, so that's why also then you weren't really afraid of putting something up your butt at 18, because you had been experimenting and curious about that before.
Yeah, I didn't put things in my vagina very much because I was like, I can remember hearing that, you know, you'd break your hymen with a tampon. You can't use a tampon because you're too young.
You just when I was in like middle school, we had this test, the virginity test. Someone would just come up behind you and they would take like their hands and, you know, pinch your hips. And when they came up behind you and pinched you on the hips, if you jumped, you weren't a virgin. But of course,
you weren't a virgin.
And so everyone, I mean, you couldn't, of course, the first time someone goes behind you and you don't know you're there, you're gonna jump. But you didn't want to jump because, oh my God forbid you weren't a virgin. Even if you weren't a virgin, you didn't want anyone to know you weren't a virgin. So I remember being like jumping the first time and then being like, no, do it again. I'm a virgin, you know, like crazy stupid shit we would do to prove stupid shit.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I think I put my first tampon in after I had sex the first time because I was like, that'll hurt.
Breaking the hymen sounds like the scariest thing in the world, right? Too, like, oh my God, that's going to be so painful. Like, I remember the first time I had sex, I prepared. I was with someone for a year and a half before we had sex, intercourse. And it took me 8 months to give him a blowjob. So this guy waited for a long time for me. That's how good I am, people. No. The first time, like, I prepared it all, and I remember being like, oh my God, it's going to be the scariest thing ever. It's going to hurt so much. And it hurt, and I bled. And, I mean, he was also really big, which I didn't know at the time either, because it was the only penis I'd ever seen. And afterwards, I was just like, oh, that's it? Let's go get ice cream. Like, that was so disappointing in the end, because, I don't know, I expected, like, to really feel, like, transformed in my body. And I just felt like I did something. I don't know what it was. Like that, it's kind of really...
I remember feeling that, you know how when you're going through high school, you take all your classes with your friends and you have to be together every minute of the day. When I lost my virginity, I went, wow, we're alone. None of them experienced that. Like, I can't tell them about that and have them know because, you know, some of them had already been having sex and they tell me about it and I'd go, huh, you know, because I hadn't had sex. I'd seen it plenty, but I hadn't had it. And when I had it, I went, my take is probably a different take than theirs. And it made me realize that, you know, Your friends can't go everywhere with you.
Yeah.
And you're alone in life.
When did you first have sex for love? Or sex in love, I should
Wait,
say.
Wait, have I had that yet?
Have you had that yet?
Most of my sex, I am in my first, I've done some relationships which weren't very healthy.
And you're in a relationship now that is healthy?
It's probably my first healthy relationship. We've been together about 3 years. And I may not be as interested in sex as I should be because it's a totally different animal than having sex for fun. You know, I made these weird adventures up with total strangers. I'm kind of a fan of anonymous sex. It's not the same thing when you're a couple and you're just like, okay. I make up stupid games. Like sometimes I'll say, let's do the old guy and Anna Nicole Smith. But I get to be the old guy. Darn, leave me your, he's like on top of me. Darn, leave me your money. No, I'm not going to leave you my millions. You know, it's just a stupid game. I like stupid games, you know. They entertain me.
I want to talk about this anonymous sex thing because you were telling me a story earlier that I'd love to repeat. When you were dating on Craigslist, you had this thing where you wanted to meet people but not know what they looked like.
Yeah, whenever I put ads on Craigslist, they always sort of had a theme to them, which is why themed storytelling works so well for me.
Yeah, so each of Body, by the way, events are a themed storytelling event at this point.
Right. Last week was Experience Junkie. Next week is Catalyst. We have Fence Sitter coming up. We have Not Safe for Work, so, you know, in the same way that a lot of storytelling events do that. I like to create themed ads when I was on Craigslist, and one of them that I did was called the Unknown Hookup, where I would say, you are going to take a brown paper bag, you're going to cut the eye holes out, mouth hole out, you're going to come meet me in a bar, sit down at the bar, you'll know to sit next to me because I will also have a brown paper bag on my head with the eye holes cut out. And we will sit there and talk in a bar with bags on our heads, and if we hit it off, then we will go back to my house and we will leave the bags on our heads and we will have sex that way. And a lot of people sent me pictures with bags on their heads, which was fun. It was like, they're getting into it. That's awesome. And several people went, if this ever became a party, I would love to go to this party. So Jamie, you and I are going to
We are going to throw this party. Yes, we are in May in San Francisco, a singles party for people.
The thing that was always really big for me was I'm a phone person.
Mm.
I often met, like if we met on Craigslist and we swapped whatever information, that's great. The next step was always the phone so I could hear your voice. And I'm really big on voices. I mean, and so I get to, sometimes people will do phone run-throughs with me for the show, and I'll just sit there and go, your voice so does not work for me, or your voice is awesome.
So voice is a really big turn-on for you.
And I'm very curious to see how somebody with a great voice and a brown paper bag on their head works.
Well, it's funny, because in my radio days, I would assume that they had a butter face. Or when someone once said to me, you don't have a face for radio, and I was like, that's very sweet. I know what that meant, but it's not very nice to people in radio, but yeah. I mean, so it's fascinating to me, just the whole, like, I can admit, you know, like, I'm not perfect, like, and, which we're all perfect, whatever you want to say, but, you know, we were talking about, I don't want to be single anymore. I don't want to be single. I don't give a shit if it's great to be single. I don't want to be single. I'm really curious if I can expand my horizons by meeting people with brown paper bags, because, you know, we care how we look, so...
And think about how great the story is. When you talk about, you know, when people are like, y'all been together 5 years, how'd you meet? I threw this party where everybody wore a brown paper bag on their head, and he just stood out, even though I couldn't see his face. I know a couple. They're not together anymore, but they were both clowns. They were both porny kind of clowns. And there used to be a site called Nice Boots Wanna Fuck, or something like that.
So it's just boots.
It wasn't just boots. It was just the nickname. It was some programmer had done it as a hobby. And you could go through and you could see things about people. She had a clown picture on her profile. If the other person was interested in you, they would click, you know, you could sit there and go, like it, like it, like it. Unless the other person said like it about you, you wouldn't make a connection. It would connect the two of you if both people were interested in each other.
Okay.
Both these people, the guy saw her clown picture. Loved her. Was just like, I want to get together with that woman. So she showed up for the hookup date in clown. And he thought, oh my God. They got together 3 times. Her and clown. Him having no idea what she looked like. And on the 4th date, she showed up in regular girl. And he went, oh my God, you're beautiful. And they got into a relationship. He was already in love with her, but he had no idea who he was sleeping with.
Well, I think it's very important because
you know, it is the physical is, I mean, even the nose is the most, it is the most influential factor in attraction. We don't realize it, but it is. And in fact, women on birth control, if they are in a relationship, when you start birth control, when you get off birth control, a lot of times you're not attracted to your partner the same way, because birth control masks the scent of smell and changes how you smell people. And a lot of women, when they go off birth control, find a different attraction to their partner, or lack of attraction or whatever, because of that.
Wow.
So it would be curious to me to see like how much the nose plays a role, but how many people actually met you in brown paper bags? And does anyone sit next to you that's not in a brown paper bag?
No, nobody would do it. Nobody. Lots of people said, if you throw the party, I'll do it.
Oh, but no one met you at a bar.
No, they're like, I'm not doing that. And I'm like, well, then you're not the guy.
And you would have gone into a bar in a brown paper
bag. Oh, absolutely. And the ad had a picture of me topless with a brown paper bag on. You know, just like, hi, this is me. You're not going to recognize me because I won't be topless in a bar. But, you know, if you're looking for sexual attraction, there's a starting place.
So how did you meet your partner now?
Casual encounters.
I think a lot more people meet this way than, you know, than we know.
Yeah, it was such a knee-jerk thing for me. You know, I'm just like, I'd get bored, I'd place an ad, I just want to have some crazy adventure. So my ads were all particularly themed, and I think this was just, I've taught how to get laid on Craigslist back when Craigslist worked well for women.
You taught a workshop how to get laid on Craigslist?
Oh yeah, I taught it a couple times. Yeah, and I've written articles on how to hook up safely and stuff like that. And a lot of my female friends over the years would go, you've done this, but I could never do this. I'm going through divorce. I don't know that I would feel weird or unsafe or, you know, and like, how do you do it? So I taught all my friends and would help them write their ads, because I like writing ads for other people. And it, so eventually people said, why don't you teach a class on this? And so, you know, I've been doing it for so long, but I can tell you one of the things that gets the best responses is rants. Ads that are just like, holy fucking shit, why is it so hard to find a fuck buddy in this town? Everybody's so sex positive, but you can't find anybody to just fuck and get together with and have a great time and like just enough, but not too much. And it was one of those, and I got a lot of responses. And I think I had a date with one guy, went to his neighborhood, because I'm like, I'm not coming in your house, I don't know you. We were going to meet at a bar. And he was just like, asked me all these questions on the phone. And I'm just like, you're getting a little too keyed up there. And, you know, when I got to his neighborhood, I called him 6 times and he didn't answer. And I left him the final message going, you asshole, you were jerking off. You just can't even wait till I get there. You're just jerking off the thought of me. You're in that much of a hurry? Who wants to have sex with you? You know, and I was just pissed off. And so the next day I wrote the few guys that I had in the queue and went, sorry, not going to happen. And my partner, Bent, went, well, let's go on a date. And we got together and went to lunch, and there wasn't really...
So this wasn't the guy that didn't... Bent was not the guy who... Okay.
This was the guy that fucked it up for the other guys.
But there wasn't really chemistry between you and your partner?
No. I looked at his picture and he wasn't my type. And I don't know what my type was, but he wasn't my type. Guys who take pictures for online ads often do that. I'm going to take my webcam shot. Great. You look cross-eyed and it looks like you're a serial killer. You know, and his picture was kind of one of those. And I'm like, dude, I just want to teach you how to do it. I don't want to, like, you know. But he was really sweet and just the nicest guy. So I'm like, okay, come over. Let's go to lunch. And we went to lunch and talked to him all a minute. And then that night I was leaving work and I just had a great time with him. And I said, hey, I used to work in your neighborhood. And I knew where he worked. And I was just like, you want to go for a walk? So we went for a walk and it was freezing. It was like November. And we started making out and he was just getting all keyed up. And I was like, we're not fucking.
Was there chemistry when you kissed?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, he was a good kisser. He is a good kisser. And we started making out hot and heavy. I'm like, we're not fucking. Not going to happen. And he's like, that's fine. That's fine. And I just kept getting more and more worked up. And eventually I just went, all right, we're going to your house, but nothing's going to happen. Like, we know.
That's a bad idea, going to a house. That never means nothing's going
to
happen.
But you know how you get so used to the fact that when you have sex with somebody, they disappear because they were just after sex?
Yeah.
Really, on casual encounters, does that happen?
Yes.
And so I was just bound and determined that I was not going to have sex with him. And I have this big weakness I have is if you accidentally spill that there's something you've never done, I really want to do it with you because then I can be this person who brings that into your life.
Like you did for that woman at Power Exchange.
I didn't really intend to do that, but yeah. And somehow over the when we were making out, he said something about fisting, and he'd never done it. I'm like, really? That's not you putting your body inside my body. So
that's the first thing you guys do is fisting.
We refer to our anniversary as the fistiversary.
Oh my God, that's wonderful. Like, we'll start with fisting and go from there.
Yes, I'm a good girl. I'm not having sex with you. What kind of girl do you think I am?
Right. Only in the butt or only with your fist. Dixie De La Tour, now you know how to get her in bed. It's not going to be vaginally, but anything else. So I have one other question for you. This has been so fun and easy. You talk a lot about role playing, or you said that you really like taking on roles, and I can hear that you're good with dirty talk. I'm like super shy about this.
Really?
Like, I've started to do it more because I want to practice as well. And so I'm like, okay, I can talk in the moment. Like, my last partner was like, tell me things that turn you on about what I do. And I'm like, oh! What would you give him good advice about, like, how to start dirty talking? You just do it.
Well, it depends on where you're starting from. I really like role play. So role play is a great place to start because it's kind of putting yourself into a third person scene. You know, it's not like you and, you know, you are inside me and it feels so amazing. That's a little off-putting, I think. You know, if you kind of become a character and they become a character is a good starting point.
Okay.
Where you're just like, okay, I'm going to be Anna Nicole Smith and you get to be the dirty old millionaire.
I love acting and I have such a hard time doing
it. So much fun. It's so much fun to play and act in bed because you're just like, what are we going to do tonight? You know, it spices it up. Even if you're with somebody that you've been with for a while, you're just like, okay.
You need to do that. You do need to do that.
And you read an article and you're just like, huh, that's interesting. Or you watch something on YouTube and you're just like, I'm going to pretend I'm her and you can pretend you're him. Send him the video and say, let's go home. And you know.
That's what I like using porn for sometimes, is like taking on the roles of the people in the videos. Like, okay, I just saw this scene. Let's reenact it now at home.
Exactly. Yeah.
So that's third person. If you want to see first person stories, then you need to, well, first of all, you can watch videos. If you're not in an area right now where body storytelling is performing live, you can watch videos of performers on, you do have a YouTube channel as well?
Yeah. Or? Body storytelling is on YouTube. Body, B-A-W-D-Y.
Right. And body, and you can, body, there's my,
body,
New York,
I like
my New York accent. I can't do it. It's funny. I don't have the accent that I used to have. And people are like, talk New York. And I guess if you get me drunk, I can
I
talk it better.
People talk New York.
But bodystorytelling.com is the website. You can also find it on Twitter and Facebook at body, B-A-W-D-Y. Definitely follow it and, you know, submit your own stories. For people who don't want to get up on stage, there's a book coming out and Dixie is looking for stories for the book. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. I'm looking for submissions for it. We'd really love to have stories from people who just have performance anxiety, or they just have something they want to get out there in the world.
And they don't have to be outrageous. I mean, the stories that you've experienced, there are a lot of things that maybe people haven't done. I mean, what sex changes your life? And it doesn't have to be something so crazy to change your life. It could be the first time that you had intercourse. It could be the first time that you felt like you were in your body. There's so many things that are so transformational about sex that are stories. So what is your story? Really think about that. You can find me on Twitter at J-A-M-Y-E. And I'd love to hear what you think. So email us. Email me, hotwax2t@gmail.com. And thank you for listening to the Hot Socks podcast. Please check out Body Storytelling. And if you're in San Francisco, check out the next event. 2 a month. Plus, do you have other cities lined up at all?
We haven't figured out exactly where we're going yet. We just did San Diego. Portland's coming up soon.
And what did you do at Yale Sex Week?
I taught sex and storytelling, so that I could get college students to kind of learn how to share their story in a way that felt comfortable for them. And then we did a performance. Reed Mahalko did his Sex Geek Chic workshop, and he taught about things like the clitoral legs and, you know,
the crura. I love that.
And we were the opening act for him, and we just brought like a small portion of the show to Yale.
So yeah, you can bring body storytelling to colleges and to, I mean, I'd love to even see it in, well, high school's getting a little crazy, so I'll shut up there. But really, what is your sex story? What's your favorite sex story? You don't have to share it with me. I just want you to think about it. And I'll be back again next week with another Hot Socks podcast. Until then, thank you, Dixie.
Thank you.
So there's an addendum to this story. A few nights after we recorded this podcast,
Dixie convinced me to get on stage at a body storytelling and tell my story of how I became a sex educator, the catalysts. A lot of them are mentioned actually in this radio program, which helped me to act, to plan out my story. And I'm really glad. It was a wonderful night, met wonderful storytellers, and I even recorded my story on my iPhone. So it's going to be low. I'm going to play it for you, though, if you'd like to hear it. This is the story I told at Body Storytelling in Oakland on March 20th. Thanks.
So our first storyteller tonight was recently listed in Forbes.com about the business of sex education. How fucking impressive. Forbes.com. That's what perverts are taking over the world. Mainstream outlets now. She has a new book, Hot Sex. It is going to be for sale at the break in the back. You'll have a chance to talk to her, buy her book, because there's nothing like going to listen to a bunch of dirty stories and taking home some pornography with you. She also has a podcast, Hot Socks, which sounds like her book. And if you listen this Friday, I'm going to be on it. She interviewed me last week. She just moved here from L.A. She's famous. I'm not kidding, and I'm already her biggest fan. Please welcome to the stage, Jamie Waxman.
Hi, everyone.
Hi. Hi,
Jamie. Breathe. Hi. Okay. I was 6 years old the first time I saw Dorian. I was moving into a new house across the street from where she lived, and she had short brown hair and was digging for worms, and I thought she was a boy. So I went over to meet her and say hello and was wheeling my one-year-old sister and realized she was a girl and she became my best friend. By the age of 11, we were playing Barbies a lot, either in my basement or in her basement. Actually, we were playing lesbian Barbies a lot. We didn't have a lot of Ken dolls, so we used the Barbies to the best of our advantage. One night, as she was heading home to dinner, we were outside on my porch, and she said to me, "My girlfriend Lisa and I used to kiss. Would you like to practice kissing?" Yeah, I was like totally curious and was like, absolutely. So the next day we were down in my basement and we started kissing. This lasted for 4 years. Our parents were also best friends, so we took family vacations together. And our parents always put, there were five of us, five kids, we'd always be in the same room, and Dorian and I would share a bed, and we'd play games like throw a sock under the blanket and get under there and start making out. Our siblings asked us what we were doing, and we'd be like, look, it's the sock game, trying to get them excited about throwing a sock under a blanket. As I entered my teenage years, I started to freak out. I didn't know anybody else who was kissing girls. I didn't understand what it would mean if I was gay or anything like that. This was a time when Rock Hudson was dying of some mysterious disease and Liberace was just very, very sparkly. And I was going to be an Academy Award winning actress. And I had this overriding fear that I was going to win for Best Actress, and Dorian was going to call the Academy the next day and say, "She's a lesbian, you need to take that award away." So by the age of 15, I ended things with Dorian, and I started dating boys. My first boyfriend was a man who looked like Christian Slater. And it took me 8 months to give him a blowjob and a year and a half to actually have sex with him. And by the time we did, we kept dating. I followed him to college. We dated for a total of 9 years, and halfway through that time, I told him about Dorian. The thing was, he had no interest. He wasn't impressed. He wasn't like, wow, my girlfriend likes chicks or anything like that. And so I dropped it. I would travel, and on one vacation to Los Angeles, I was visiting with my aunt and uncle. And it was my last day there, and my aunt, who's not a woman of few words normally, she was making breakfast, and she said to me, "Your uncle and I think you're settling. How many pancakes do you want?" And I flew home with this knowledge. I flew back to New York. That's where I was living at the time. At the same time, I was starting my career in radio. This was my passion, and I had been in promotions in radio for a few years since college, and I wasn't really happy. It was very obvious promotions was not my thing. So I was up for a big job as a producer of a talk radio, nationally syndicated talk radio show overnights from midnight to 5, and I was also up for a huge job as a promotions manager at the largest sports station in the country. On Monday, Jack and I were on the phone at work, and we were discussing our plans to go see Billy Joel that weekend. I am from Long Island, so I think that makes it okay. And I told him we needed to talk, and he caught on pretty quickly that something wasn't right, and we broke up on the phone. I took the producer position that night and started working overnights, and the first night I came home, my doorman had a bag for me. In the bag was broken glass and pictures and all this hockey paraphernalia and other sports stuff, because Jack was a really big sports fan and I hated sports, so he returned everything I ever gave him. And he also returned a note written in red crayon. And at the very end of the note, he said, "My friends and I think you're a lesbian. You should do something about it." I cried. I didn't know what to do. I had only talked to 2 or 3 people at this point, and I had even helped a friend in the next year come out, who started to say to me, "You should really look at yourself while you help me." I was freaked out. I was using vibrators, I was having sex, and I didn't know how to talk about my own sexuality. While producing, I got offered a job at a talk radio station on the internet, so way ahead of its time. This was 1998, 99, 2000, called eyata.com. And I was offered the overnight position there because that's what I did. The late night show was a sex talk show hosted by a man named Bob Berkowitz. Bob had been a political correspondent for CNN. He had covered the Reagan White House, the same White House that had been doing something that had been doing something called brown bagging it. This is where men would go into the bathroom, put a brown paper bag down in front of the toilet, another man would step in the bag, and then fellate his partner. So there was a lot of gay sex going on in the Reagan White House. And then from there, Bob became a men's issues correspondent at the Today Show. And then they gave him his own TV show called Real Personal on MSNBC. He was super fed up with the amount of producers he had gone through on this talk radio station. I was number 4 in a span of 3 months. And so Bob put me on the air that first night and said, "Tell me about your sex life. What was your first sexual experience?" And for the first time in my life, I told him everything about Dorian, about my boyfriends, about my questioning my sexuality. And the next day I walked into work and people nodded. And then I started getting emails that people understood what I was going through and that they had the same sort of experiences. And it felt amazing. Over the next 2 years, I produced 5 days a week, 3 hours a day talk radio all about sex, and I got to meet everyone. I started going back to school to get my master's in sex education, and I worked at a sex toy shop in New York called Babeland. I also started writing for Playgirl, yay, Babeland, yes. And I did anything I could to learn more about sexuality. Around the same time, Miata went under, and for a few months I supported myself on sex, but I really missed radio. And I scored the best job in November of that year, producing talk radio for Joan Rivers. So I'm on the air with Joan one night, and she says to me, "What's the best-selling thing at Babeland?" And you know, I don't have a lot of tact or processing like that, so I start talking immediately about Bend Over Boyfriend, which produced here in San Francisco in the early 90s, I think, and how strap-on sex is really hot. Well, the next day, we got those same sort of looks I got the first time, only they weren't much of approval. And within a few weeks, Joan had decided she had enough, that she wasn't going to continue doing the radio show. Her last day on radio, ironically, I was out shooting a porn with a good friend of mine named Candida Royale. So I wasn't there, but I heard she said very nice things about me. When I got back to work in radio, they passed me over to really what for most people in radio is the ideal job. I was the drive time talk radio producer on a station called WOR. 3 call letters means it's one of the oldest stations in the country. I was working with a fiscally conservative, socially liberal talk show host who, when he would go on vacation, would have co-hosts or sub-hosts like, oh, Jackie Mason and Ann Coulter. But it was the day that G. Gordon Liddy's daughter looked up at me while she said, the problem with our schools these days is that we are not teaching our children how to duck and cover. Instead, we are teaching them how to unroll a condom. And she winked at me and smiled, and I thought, there is no amount of security, which for a hypochondriac like me meant health insurance, that can keep me in this job. And there is no place in radio that I can talk frankly about sex. But that was then. 2003, 2004, this is now. And now there are podcasts and there's satellite radio. And, you know, there are different types of pancakes besides just plain and fruity. And I had major reservations about doing this show tonight. And I realized that this being up here right now for me is a catalyst. And it reminds me it's time to get back to my roots. So thank you. And thank you.
Boyfriend.